Gail Straub has written a beautiful new book entitled The Ashokan Way, Landscape's Path into Consciousness. In the book, there are these evocative entries that describe a long walk along the ever-changing reservoir illuminating the natural world as a portal to self-understanding, restoration, and meaning. Gail Straub is the executive editor of the Empowerment Institute, which she co-founded in 1981. As one of the world's leading authorities on women's empowerment, she co-directs the Empowerment Institute School for Transformative Social Change, empowering change agents from around the world to design and implement cutting-edge social innovations. Again, the name of the new book is The Ashokan Way, Landscape's Path into Consciousness. She will be having a bookhouse event at Stuyvesant Plaza on Thursday night at 7 p.m. with Stephen Cope, who wrote the foreword to the book, and it's a pleasure to welcome Gail Straub to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you, Joe.
I always love talking to you, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. What led you to start to, well, let's start with because I was going to ask you what led to the book, but let me start with the walks that you started to take in your relationship with the Ashokan Reservoir itself.
I've lived on the Ashokan Reservoir for 36 years, and I fall out of my bed, and I'm on the walk. So it's as familiar to me as the people I'm closest to. I had never thought about writing about it, but one Thanksgiving, I was feeling a lot of gratitude. It's very beautiful, mountains, water, forest. And I started jotting down some little scribbles. And soon enough, I knew that a book was emerging that would be a kind of love letter to the landscape.
The fascinating thing about the entries, about the, because each is basically based on a walk, right?
Yes.
And a different thought as you're walking. I want you to just look at the, explain if you can, the physical act of walking and allowing the thoughts to kind of burble up from within that then manifests themselves into a written story.
That's a wonderful question. As I began writing, I would go out and I would very naturally bring my focus to some aspect of the landscape, maybe the reservoir, maybe the mountains. And then very quickly, that outer landscape brought me to a place in my inner landscape. It could be a sense of joy, it could be a sense of contemplating the world or another person. And one of the most interesting things, Joe, was that the writing showed me this constant bridge between an aspect out in the land and an aspect in me. And I think that was one of the most pleasurable things about writing the book, was finding that bridge between outer landscape and inner landscape.
How do you describe inner landscape and as the subtitle would suggest, how that associates itself with consciousness?
Yes. I began to be much more aware that often when I went out, I was leaving my work. I'm an activist, and I was leaving a lot of stress. I work in difficult places, the Middle East, Afghanistan, India. And I would be leaving hundreds of emails and often difficult conversations with colleagues in other parts of the world. So when I went out, I was kind of exiled from myself. I was stressed. I was in a state of distraction, if you wish. But as I walked and as my attention focused on, again, any aspect, the water, the mountains, the creatures, my mind would quiet. The stress would begin to fall away. And I called that phase return. I would begin to return to a more peaceful part of myself. And often for me, by the end of the walk, I felt I belonged to something larger, the land, the cosmos. So these three phases of exile, return, and then belong seemed to me a pathway into consciousness. And that happens for me almost every walk.
You write in the book, I've often pondered when I'm out in the landscape exactly who is witnessing all this beauty. Do you have an answer to that question?
I don't have an answer, but I did come to deeply believe that the exchange is mutual. And I use this Rilke quote. Rilke said to us, there is no place at all that is not watching you. And so many of us who love the natural world wonder, we feel its impact on us. We feel inspired, restored, all those kinds of things. And then we say, actually, is it some kind of two-way exchange? Is it a mutual exchange? Is my presence and my appreciation and my daily encounter with those mountains felt by the landscape? You know, mystics and indigenous peoples and poets all believe there's no separation, that it is a reciprocal exchange. And I began to feel that more and more, Joe, that it went both ways.
The book begins in November, then December, January, February, and then it ends in November. So you come full circle. It is also broken up seasonally, winter, spring, summer, fall. Outside of the obvious, how does the time of year influence our thoughts and feelings and that consciousness as we go through a cycle?
Yeah. I think it influences us a lot. So I began on Thanksgiving as a kind of offering of gratitude, if you wish. But for me, I happen to love the winter landscape, especially if there's really a big snowstorm and all kinds of weather's blowing in. I felt that the landscape in the winter was more, if I could say this, more serious, had in a certain way more gravitas.
Sure.
And then as spring came, like it is now, this glorious bursting forth, it's a more joyful feeling. I would maybe think of the emotion as more exterior. Summer for me is languid and relaxed, and your thoughts maybe are a bit more interior as well. And then winter and then fall, of course, as so many writers have said, you begin to think of death. And I think one of the great gifts of having the seasons is how we see the constant paradox in the natural world. We see birth, we see death, we see darkness, we see light, we have wild weather that's destructive and gorgeous weather that inspires us. So it is, as so many writers of place have said, the great teacher of going towards the paradoxical nature of life.
So let me ask this, and I apologize if this comes off as clunky, but I know in my mind what I want to ask you. Hopefully the words actually align that is what I ask you. But I'm fascinated by this notion of a walk and the moment that gives us, the fact that allows us to open our mind and open our mind to nature and, as you indicate, to our consciousness. But also it allows us to think. It allows us, our minds, to wander and to get filled up with stuff. So are you ultimately looking for both in times where you can think about, oh, for God's sakes, what's happening with this Stormy Daniels thing? And let that take care and work its way through your brain as you are immersed in a landscape, and yet also clear your head so it's more of a meditative moment. Can you have it both ways?
I think that's one of the great joys of a walk in the natural world, whether it's an urban park or a gorgeous rural setting. I think often many of us empty first. We go out and we've had the 100 emails, whatever our particular form of distraction. And when we go out, we empty. But once we empty, I think then, as so many writers have said before me, our clearest thinking can come about the state of the world, about a person we're in relationship with, about a creative project we're involved with. And I think that walking has been often said as the great place of inspiration, where and a period of emptiness is followed by tremendous clarity, even epiphanies for some people.
And even though your head is filled with these thoughts and you are working things out and you are actively thinking, are you still noticing the landscape? Is it still affecting? I mean, I realize the answer is yes, but talk about that connection of how it does allow itself to still permeate and have an effect on the way that we think about these things.
You know, I think that's such a wonderful question, because that's the exchange I was talking about earlier. So at first, the landscape helps me empty. So
right.
Let's say I focus on a blue heron. I'm with the blue heron. The mind is calming and emptying. Then I begin to think about something in the world that concerns me tremendously. And I'm thinking on that. I'm turning it over in my mind. I'm trying to find understanding. Then maybe I notice the mountain and I'm off focused on the landscape again, and that affects my interior process of how I'm contemplating the world. So your question to me really illuminates why it is a back and forth exchange. Mm.
It's a dreamlike quality, and often we have trouble describing our dreams and understanding our dreams. As a writer, how do you then understand and fully comprehend what you have experienced while taking those walks?
I feel, as I said in any number of the essays in the book, that I've been walking. It's the same walk for 36 years. It's like a round.
You can
in
mix
a way.
It up a bit. Maybe it's time to mix it up a bit, Gail.
And when I travel, of course, I can't walk there. But you know, I think, Joe, honestly, we'll never know everything about that landscape. Annie Dillard had a great line in Pilgrim at Tinker Street. She said, "I go out expecting to be surprised." And that's kind of how I go out each day. I go out expecting to be altered, expecting to be surprised. And I think the landscape, the seasons, to your earlier point, are so infinitely varied. I could go out in the morning on a walk and be affected in a certain way, and then go out again at sunset and be affected in a radically different way.
Gail Straub's new book is The Ashokan Way, Landscape's Path into Consciousness. She will be having an event at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza on Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. 6, Six o'clock. O'clock. 6 o'clock at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza. And again, the name of the book is The Ashokan Way. It's a beautiful volume. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Great pleasure to have you on the program. Gail Straub's new book is The Ashokan Way, and the event is 6 o'clock Thursday night at the Bookhouse in Stuyvesant Plaza. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.